The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. Serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to, no, we don't return, we start, break open the cover of a brand new issue of Our State magazine celebrating North Carolina. This one for October 2020, and we'd like to thank, as we periodically do, the fine folks at Our State for sharing this copy with us without charge so that we may share it with our sight-impaired listeners. The theme this month, and there always is a theme, is the annual mountain issue, The Colors of Autumn, Our Guide to Amazing Fall Views. They have a little map inside the front cover as part of the table of contents. It says this month, and I don't know if we're going to cover this, they start out, not start out, but they get as far east as Buxton, which is about as far east as you can get in North Carolina, out there in the Outer Banks. And we get pretty far to the west, not quite to Cherokee, but in Bryson City, which I think we may get to. And in any case, we are going to start, as we always do, the first reading of the month, with the Welcome to Our State from Elizabeth, Family Trees. Here I was in the front yard of the house at near dark, plucking leaves from low-hanging branches and shoving them by the fistful into a canvas tote to bring inside and dump out across the dining room table. Don't wait until the last minute to start this project, the teacher had admonished. And yet that's exactly what I had done, putting off my seventh grade science assignment, a leaf identification project, until, well, now, a few days before it was due. We were required to collect leaves from a dozen or so trees around Randolph County over the course of a month and mount them in a three-ring binder. Identify each leaf by its common name, scientific name, whether it came from a deciduous or a coniferous tree, and give a description of each. Thanks to my procrastination, I can't imagine I got a very good grade in the project, and although it's almost been 40 years, I regret not putting in more time and effort and thought. If I could go back and gather again, what would I collect from the ground, from the branches? What would I put in that three-ring binder? For the first page, I'd surely clip the glossy green leaves from a massive magnolia tree, Magnolia grandiflora, that stood up on the hill from my grandmother's house. In the heat of the summer, she and I walked up to the tree so that she could snip a few stems for a vase. It wasn't even our tree. It belonged to the city of Ashboro and was technically on the grounds of the county courthouse. But in the 1960s, she worked in the Registry of Deeds department there, and still she knew folks who assured her with a wink that it'd be just fine if she pruned up that tree a little. To this day, I can't walk past the magnolia without pressing my nose to the blossoms, an instant olfactory transport to my grandmother's house, so filled with ambrosial sweetness. I'd certainly seek out the pointed leaves of the eastern black walnut, Juglans nigra. It was spread out all over the property at my great-uncle's farm in Ramsar, where we gathered for family reunions, a rare chance to visit with cousins who tromped with me beneath those trees, entertaining ourselves by trying to crush, flatten, or somehow pulverize the impenetrable husks from those nuts. I'd look for the curved leaves of the pecan tree, Carya Illinonensis, a reminder of the countless pies I've eaten, the nuts scooped from backyards and delivers in baskets by good neighbors. And I definitely search for oaks, not the willow oaks or the pin oaks or the red oaks, but the kind that filled my parents' property, the white oaks, Quercus alba, their roots buried deep in the clay soil, their leaves in autumn burnished to shades of brown and maroon. Oh, there were so many acorns, a substratum of woody shells underneath, beneath the layer of leaves that my parents spent hours raking, heaping on a tarp, dragging to the ditches. I remember the smell of those smoldering leaves, early evening trails of smoke wafting from the piles set aflame. For some, autumn is the smell of pumpkin spice. For me, it's leaf smoke, all musk and incense, a burnt offering to a new season, a blessing for the gifts of the earth for all generations. And now, as I always do in the first reading of the month, I'd like to interpret the photo essay for you, for those of you who cannot see it or cannot see it clearly. It starts on page 64 of the October issue. Bright medium blue background, and that's the sky. There's a Ferris wheel out of focus on the right, and a hand holding what looks to be a Krispy Kreme donut with glazed surface on it, on the right-hand side in front of that Ferris wheel. Actually, it says the treats from Peachy's Baking Company, as you might know them as Amish donuts, I knew it didn't quite look like a Krispy Kreme, are shaped by hand, says co-owner Sam Peachy, so each one has its own personality. Yeah, this isn't quite round enough for a Krispy Kreme donut. Photo essay, State Fair, F-A-R-E. We'll be dreaming of those 11 delicious days in Raleigh until we're back at the North Carolina State Fairgrounds. For now, we're fondly revisiting the best eats and the friendliest faces that only come around once a year. Katie St. Singh is the author. Let's start out with Country Sweet Apple Cider. Joard Ling, that's L-I-N-G-G, and Joard is J-O-U-A-R-D, I spell him because it's an unusual name, sounds Norwegian maybe, has been making cider for nearly all of his 68 years, the third generation to work with apples since his grandpa started a farm in Michigan in the 1930s. In 1986, when Joard's parents were ready to retire, they passed down the family cider mill to their son and daughter-in-law, Susan, who brought it to North Carolina and set up a log cabin at the state fair. In the early years, Ma and Pa Ling came out to the fair to help out, and Ma Ling brought along her recipe for hot cider spiced with cinnamon, allspice, and cloves. Although most of the original wooden mill, purchased in 1928, has been replaced with stainless steel, Joard salvaged the elevator which carries apples up to the hopper before they are pressed. And the process remains the same. Crowds gather to watch Joard turn bushels of red and yellow delicious apples, one tartar variety added, like wine sap, into gallons of small batch cider. When you make and serve the cider, Susan says, you can see the essence of the apples, and it just dances in the air. And here they are in their little booth. Mr. Joard, or Mr. Ling, his name is Joard, has on a pink short-sleeve shirt, and he has an apron over it. He has a plastic cup of cider in his right hand, a big smile on his face, from which extends a very white beard. On top of his head, he has what looks to be like a straw hat. It's not frilly edged, but it's that type of a hat. His wife, who's just comes up to his shoulders, is beside him. She has a red apron on and a yellow apple in front of her. Behind them, you can see some vats that are feeding into a dispenser. Clearly, they have the cider in them. And above it, a sign that says, Freezy, freezing apple cider, $4. Woo, not cheap, is it? So you can get hot. There are apples in red with white letters on them on the side, not real apples, they're signs, on the side of the booth that they're looking through. It says hot spice cider, freezy, fresh cold cider, and then it's repeated on the right side. Apparently they just put it in a different order on the other side, but they're all $4 a piece. And down here there's a cup, and it has a frothy drink in it. It says, for years, hot spiced cider was a bestseller for Susan and Gerard Ling, but their refreshing apple freezies have become a popular choice on warm October days. On the right-hand page is a large view of their little shack, their little... it's not a log cabin, but it has unpainted wood slats constructing it and a metal roof. And it says fresh apple cider in the sign and the little window that we saw with the signs. Cash only, by the way, it says. And a scarecrow on the side that says hot spice cider lids. Overleaf, we see some chicken legs and two men eating them aggressively. McBride Concessions. Feeding fairgoers has been a tradition for Bess McBride Brinkley's family since the early 1900s, when her great-grandfather opened a food booth at the Rockingham County Fair. During the Great Depression, her grandfather, Woody McBride, left home with his brothers, finding work on the road with a traveling carnival. When he returned to North Carolina in 1932, he started his own concession company, making a name for himself at the State Fair and the Dixie Classic Fair in Winston-Salem. His daughter, Betty, helped him build the business, and later her daughter, Bess, and son-in-law, Bob, took over, never forgetting Woody's philosophy. Papa always said, never put anything on a plate you won't eat yourself. Bess recalls, as a result, McBride Concessions serves carnival classics like sausage and peppers, ribs, and barbecued chicken. But their most eye-catching offering is their turkey legs. Did I call them chicken legs? Turkey legs. I thought they were awfully big chicken legs these guys were eating. A giant snack for the larger-than-life State Fair. So there's a grill, close-up of a grill with all of them cooking on the left side, so I couldn't tell the... size, but they did look pretty dark. But up front, these two men are bending over, probably because they're afraid they're going to spill when they pull these hunks of turkey off. And they're leaning over as they eat aggressively at these turkey legs. And down here on the right-hand side, Bess McBride, Brinkley, and Chuck Denny cook plenty of giant turkey legs to customers like Corey Wessel above and Amir Barzin, fueled up for a day at the fair. How about Al's Fries? Hot, crispy fries, plain or dressed simply with ketchup, malt, vinegar, hot sauce or seasoning, have been the draw for Al's for six decades. In 1959, the first year Al set up the Free State Fair, he sold ice cream from a hand-built wooden concession stand. He found that people seemed to prefer French fries, so from the next year on, that's what he served. After Al's death in 2004, his daughter Debbie Beckwith Anderson took over the stand with her brothers Jeff and Glenn. Although they had to replace the original wooden booth in 2015, the siblings have worked hard to preserve the ingredients of their father's success. Daddy never changed the recipe, Anderson says. It's been the same thing for 60 years. Every morning during the fair, Raleigh-based Ford's Produce delivers 50-pound boxes of potatoes, which are sliced and fried in peanut oil before they're sent out to customers in heaping paper boats. The bigger, the better. There's a picture here, a close-up of the fries. It says fresh-cut French fries are simple yet irresistible. That's why Debbie Beck with Anderson, and her brothers haven't changed a thing about their father's business. Now, this is a one of those little cardboard boats. This one's white with some red stripes on it. And all of the fries are piled high. I think if they put one more on there, they'd fall out. In fact, one has fallen out on a napkin in front. And on the right-hand side, we see her in the little booth there. It says Al's French Fries in big red letters on the bottom. And Debbie is sticking her head out, big smile on her face, blonde hair coming down on either side. And she's holding one of those boats of French fries, and you've got a little, what does it say in front? I think it looks like it says malt and something, probably vinegar. Malt and vinegar you can put on yourself, and pepper, and there's something else out there that you can have in addition to some napkins. Then we have the Pick and Pig, that's P-I-K-N-P-I-G. Fresh smoked barbecue, it says in the picture. Carthage, North Carolina, home of the barbecue sundae and fresh brewed sweet iced tea. People line up in front of this little booth. There are some menus on either side. I see barbecue sandwich, barbecue plate, and barbecue sundae. And one more thing I can't read. Out of their 10-foot wide trailer, the Shepherd family serves their famous barbecue sundae, pulled pork, baked beans, coleslaw, and your choice of sauce. Sign me up. On his way home from working the state fair one year, Ashley Shepherd was inspired to sell his barbecue at a roadside stand in his hometown, Carthage. That soon led to opening the Pick and Pig restaurant nearby with his mom, Janie. In 2007, they continued going to the fair, where they became known for layering pulled pork, baked beans, and coleslaw into a barbecue sundae. It was the perfect portable meal, and the way the flavors blended together worked. For years, folks in the know would ask for the sundae at the restaurant until finally the family added it to the menu. For Ashley, whose role at the restaurant no longer involves much cooking, the state fair is an exception that he looks forward to every year. He arrives at the fairgrounds at midnight to start the barbecue. As far as he knows, he's the only vendor to cook there overnight. You get a whole different perspective of a place if you stay up all night, he says. That's one of the best things about cooking barbecue. Me and the gate guys see some of the most beautiful sunrises. Close up on the left-hand side shows a jar which says the Pick Pig on it. Looks like a glass jar being dug into with a plastic black fork by a hand that belongs to somebody in a blue, yellow, black, and white plaid shirt. And there is some delicious-looking barbecue stuffed inside that jar. Overfoot Charlie Barefoot and Sons, since 1949, says his sign above his little cooking facility here. Joe and Billy Barefoot started serving footlong hot dogs at their father's fair booth as kids and now run the business together with help from their families. For decades, Charlie Barefoot's voice rose above the busy fairgrounds, drawing in customers hungry for a hot dog. "How about one?" he'd holler. "Pick one out and I'll put it on a bun." He loves selling stuff, his son Billy says. Peaches at the farmer's market or hot dogs at the state fair. A farmer from Johnson County, Charlie saw the fair as an opportunity to make a little extra money. In 1949, he started serving up hot dogs, footlongs from the very beginning, and eventually expanded the menu to include Polish and Italian sausages, Philly cheesesteaks, and chili cheese fries. Charlie died in 2003, but even without his familiar voice, customers keep finding their way to the family's tent, now run by Billy and his brother Joe. Their own children have been helping since they were old enough to take an order and make change, Joe says. The grandkids aren't old enough, but they love to come and eat the hot dogs. There's a close-up of the two gentlemen here with their white beards, neatly trimmed, I might add, and their baseball-type hats and shirts and little half aprons, so they must have just stepped out from the grill for us. And down at the bottom is a picture of that foot long. Boy, you can tell it's a foot long hot dog. in size compared with the roll there. And something on the fried, it looks like a, on the side rather, looks like a whole bunch of French fries with heavy amount of seasoning. Cool Runnings, along with their husband, Stephen, and their three sons, Andrea Millington, serves up jerk barbecue wings and ribs, jerk chicken bowls. And here she is on the right. She has a big smile on her face. She's dressed in a navy blue outfit, including the color of her ball cap, I think. And she's looking off to her right. And she has a big smile on her face, and she's holding out two bowls of the stuff I'm probably about to talk about. But behind her, I see the words barbecue wings, chicken, Jamaican, nachos, burritos, and more that goes off the side of the picture here. When Andrea Millington and her husband Stephen started serving food at the fair 2 decades ago, they were eager to share dishes from Andrea's native Jamaica, like beef patties, jerk pork, and curry chicken. It took some time for word to get around, but their hard work has built a loyal following. Stephen cooks the meat and makes the curries, a big deal in Guyana, where he's from, while Andrea prepares dishes like white chocolate bread pudding, plantains that are grandmother's rice and peas. Their three sons, initially too young to work at the fair, now return to help every October. During the rest of the year, they're constantly sampling new foods to help inspire their parents. In fact, their eldest son's idea for a jerk pork wrap with mango salsa won Best New Food at the fair in 2018. Cooking is really a big deal in our household, Andrea says. From a cultural perspective, that's what we do. Soon, the Millington's jerk seasoning and barbecue sauce will be available by the bottle so that their customers can take home a taste of the state fair, too. Overleaf Cary United Methodist Church. We have two older men, a lady, and a young person. Can't tell the gender. I think it's female. She's got a mouthful of braces on, I'll tell you that. And she's holding out. Yeah, it's Maggie. It is a female. It says Maggie. She's holding. She's got her name tag on, and she's holding something in a biscuit out in front of her. Everybody's big smiles. Three generations of the Zimmerman family, Sherwood, Mark, Sherry, and Maggie, volunteer at Cary United Methodist booth, where ham biscuits are a 104-year-old tradition. For many North Carolinians, a visit to the state fair isn't complete until they've eaten a ham biscuit from Cary United Methodist Church, the fair's oldest vendor of record. In 1916, the women of CUMC made the inaugural batch of ham biscuits in their home kitchens and brought them to a simpler stand at the fairgrounds, earning a total of $13.32 that first day. More than a century later, CUMC runs a full-fledged restaurant together with White Plains United Methodist Church, offering cheeseburgers, Brunswick stew, and other classics. Though the ham biscuits remain the star. About 100 volunteers a day work in shifts to seat customers, bus tables, and churn out tray after tray of biscuits. The atmosphere is fun and social, says Gary Churchill, who chairs the State Fair Committee. But the point is raising money for those in need. We're grateful for the people who choose us year after year, Churchill says. We encourage people to remember there's a greater good in being our customer. Close-up of that ham biscuit. I love biscuits. You can see the ham, country ham, sticking out the edges, and it's all set on a white napkin. A real close-up makes me hungry. How about the Howling Cow? Members of North Carolina's Food Science Club, like Maggie Lampson, pile cake cones high with Howling Cow ice cream for fair growers. There's a reason why crowds gather for Howling Cow ice cream at the state fair. The huge scoops are irresistible. And they were made right down the road on the campus of North Carolina State University. In the late 1970s, students in the Food Science Club began selling North Carolina State ice cream made with milk from state's own cows at the fair as their annual fundraiser. The unforgettable name Howling Cow was adopted in 2008. Every year, food science students helped come up with a special flavor just for the fair, like caramel apple crisp and key lime pie. The bestseller, just like on campus, is always Wolf Trex. Unlike many state fair delights, Howling Cow doesn't come and go each fall, 365 days a year. Most Harris Teeters stock state's famous ice cream in freezers from mountains to coast. And earlier this year, the Howling Cow Dairy Education Center in Creamery opened, offering ice cream in a peaceful farm setting, a few miles and a world away from the bustling fairgrounds. So here's a lady adding the third scoop of, not quite sure what flavor it is. It looks like the chocolate, but it might be that special one they talk about, the Wolf Trex. And here's a young lady who's a beneficiary of that cup. Most of it is still in the cup. Some of it is running down her hand, and a lot of it is smeared on her face. But she is very happy. And finally, we come to Peachy's Baking Company. The year Sam Peachy's family moved to the Amish community in Union Grove, a bad drought threatened their farm. So his mother started the bakery in a garage, making sourdough bread, cinnamon rolls, and donuts. Yeast-raised sourdough confections that melt in your mouth. In 2007, Sam's siblings, Nate and Sadie, began sharing those special donuts at events around the country. Though they're now based in Florida, returning to North Carolina for fall fair season is a tradition. Sam says, let's see, I lost my place here. North Carolina feels like home to all of us. The Peachies also made soft pretzels and an exclusive banana pudding dough just for the state fair. Yet it's the simple glazed version that keeps customers lined up year after year. An honor to their mother's bakery, Sam says. This is a way that we can help hand down our legacy to future generations. Nicely professionally produced sign says Peachy's above the door. You're looking in the window here. They've got some condiments out front. You can see the people working inside. There's a person at another window on the left waiting to be served. Some close up of these donuts. I didn't notice it said handcrafted donuts underneath the counter of Peachy's over here. Somebody has reached in with a stick and is pulling one out of the fryer. And here's a bunch of them on a rack. Customers can watch the Peachies cut out the dough with a can and shape it by hand. When the baking process is complete, the donuts hang in a rack, dripping with vanilla glaze. And that's exactly what we see here. Well, my friends, that is all we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen in next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.